Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We're in the All-Star break. It's fantastic. Although we're all still working. We're still working.
Honestly, my break's over.
Joining us in Boston is Jackie McMullen. Good day, Jackie.
Very excited. I'm leaving for Milwaukee later today for my first visit to Fiserv Forum. I'm very, very excited to see the new home of the Milwaukee Bucks. Have you guys been there? Either of you?
I have not made my maiden voyage to the new arena.
I'm excited.
But I hear it's spectacular.
I have hotel reservations.
Am I the first member?
Yes. I have hotel reservations in the finals there, though.
No, you've already done that.
Oh, wow.
You're
that's
boy.
Thinking ahead.
Andrew the Hahn, have you been to Milwaukee yet, to their new arena?
I have not been to the new arena yet, no.
Okay. Another voice you hear.
The Hahn, the Staples Center.
Other than Andrew Hahn is Tim Band McMahon. Hahn and I are all in Los Angeles, Jackie.
I know. I'm jealous. I'm very sad about this. I didn't get the memo.
I know. It's unfortunate. But the Bucks, I spent some good time with Coach Bud over All-Star Weekend. They are, Jackie, they're the real deal. Are you revealing why you're going there, or do we have to wait for your fine products later on?
It's a long-term project, does involve Bud, who I love and have known a long time, and picked as my preseason coach of the year. And I said that to him a couple months ago, and he's like, well, thanks. No pressure. He doesn't need it. He's doing so well. He's got that team just where he wants them. It's fantastic.
Yeah, they're in a bit of a honeymoon right now. I think they and the Nuggets are in a bit of a honeymoon because they're doing great, and the expectations on them are relatively low. It's a little bit higher for the Bucks because they were in the playoffs last year. You know, they don't face the same pressures as Philly with their free agents and Boston with their free agents and Toronto with Kawhi. They sort of exist in a different little bubble. Now, their time will come because Giannis's free agency is not that far away. And nobody really talks about the fact that the majority of the Bucks team is a free agent this year. And they are under, I would assume, some level of pressure to retain that team or the bulk of that team because Giannis's free agency is not, it's 2 years away. So you can't, like, you know, get frugal.
Giannis's supermax decision's a year away.
Right. Yeah, you know, this is what Adam Silver talked about in his press conference. I don't know if you saw it. Jackie and Tim, you guys mercifully were given All-Star Weekend off. But Adam Silver basically admitted that the CBA has backfired on the extensions. And really, just to go over it real quick, before it was very difficult for players to sign an extension to their contracts. And so they put a new rule in that allowed supermax players at the highest end, if they qualified, to extend their contracts early. And we saw a couple of players do that. Russell Westbrook did it. James Harden did it. John Wall did it. And it worked. And there's no pressure of any of those guys under contract.
It worked for John Wall. It didn't work for the Wizards.
That's true. But, you know, it's not going to work for everybody in terms, you know, guys get hurt. So the idea here was don't apply the pressure to a team. Don't ever let a guy get to his last year of his contract where, you know, the standoff sort of develops. But what's happened, and Adam Silver used the dreaded phrase unintended consequences, is that it's shortened. It's actually applied more pressure because instead of removing the pressure on the last year of the contract, it now turns the pressure up to a year earlier when the extension decision has to be made. So we have a situation.
It's basically made
like
that last year a player option of sorts.
Even if you don't have a player option.
Right.
So Paul George announces, I am not extending. And he, you know, forces a trade. Kawhi Leonard Anthony Davis. And so here's the situation here,
Anthony
Davis
sped it up even, you know, months ahead of that.
Right. And it's, you know, Kevin Arnovitz calls this the creep. Not being, not Anthony Davis being a creep, but the creeping that it's coming earlier and earlier. And, he pretty much admitted that that was a failure. And so there's another example. Giannis. Jackie, I don't know what they can do about it. They're stuck in the CBA for six more years.
They are. But we've talked, we've seen possible revisions before. And I think what the NBA wanted to do in a roundabout way was to squelch the growing power of the player. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And, you know, the other day when Antonio Brown went on his latest bizarre Instagram rant while he's on his exercise machine, all I thought of was, boy, does he have NBA envy, doesn't he? He thinks he's in the NBA. He thinks he can orchestrate where he goes. Right. And so the NBA is unique in this, in the power that the players have amassed. And if I'm an NBA player, I'm going up to LeBron James and I'm going to thank him for it, because he's the one that started us all on this. And that's a great compliment to him and to the empowerment of the player. And so,
did you see the Antonio Brown? He met with the owner of the Steelers, not to turn this into an NFL podcast. They met and then they took a photo of each other, like with their arms around each other, smiling.
Right, right.
And they said, great meeting. We all decided we're going to move on. Could you imagine, like, Anthony Davis tweeting like tomorrow, him in a with Danny Ferry and Gail Benson arm in arm going, we had a great meeting and we're all just going to move on. I don't know if that's going to be a trend.
Well, and he'd have to use his right arm, because that left shoulder is really hurting him right now.
I don't know what's going to happen between now and when this pod comes out. But I am expecting a change to the Anthony Davis plan going forward.
It's untenable. I mean, I was there when he suffered that gruesome bruise of his shoulder and had to leave midway through the second half with his agent. And, you know, for the way Alvin Gentry was kind of blindsided, just, you know, Gentry is as chill a coach as there is in the NBA. And he's just had enough. And it's just nobody's winning with Anthony Davis continuing to play for the Pelicans right now.
What are you going to do? That's who he can. It's them or nothing. I mean, that's just the reality.
It's the Pelicans. The Pelicans have the right to do what's in the best interest of their franchise. Right now, what's
I agree
in the best
with
interest
that.
Of
agree.
Their franchise
yeah.
is look. Hey, we didn't ask for you to make this trade public midway through this season when you've got a full year and a half left in your contract. It's become a situation where having Anthony Davis around, as great as he is, it's just a daily. Massive distraction. It sucks the energy out of the team. They have the right to do what's in the best interest. Now, maybe they have to pay him. Fine. If it's in the best interest of the franchise to say, hey, you know, go train on your own for the rest of the season. We're gonna play with the guys who want to be here. They should have that right.
And the NBA will fold on this matter. It'll end up being negotiated that it doesn't look like they're folding. But they will fold.
They have to. They have to.
Yeah.
Although it's just a bad look. It's a bad look for the league, boy. It's a bad. This is a the whole
it's
thing.
It's a terrible
is,
look for the league.
Yeah, it's just bad.
The Kawhi stuff last year was a terrible look for the league. But guess what? Nobody's. I mean, it's not like it's had a long term dent on his image. He's playing well for Toronto. Nobody's really talking about the Spurs stuff anymore.
Yeah, but we're still a gray area as to what that injury was. I mean, I think he was legitimately hurt. I don't know if he was hurt enough not to play for 60 games or 70 games, but, you know, he was injured.
Of course he was. You know, you don't make something like that up. Why would you do that?
Right. I'm a little just desensitized, and maybe I've got to make a adjustment to the way I look at things. Like, you know, for example, this Tim Donaghy story that Scott Edens from our staff posted yesterday. And I don't really want to talk about Tim Donaghy, but the story had a lot of revelations, one of which, you know, was a pretty good case that Tim Donaghy was betting on games he was officiating. And this is what I mean by desensitized. I never believed he wasn't betting on the games. You know, if you remember his and the NBA's, you know, whatever you want to call it, their party line was
in
that
contention.
He was just using inside information to bet, and that he wasn't actually affecting the outcomes of games. And I don't know, maybe he didn't even actually really affect outcomes. He affected point spreads. That's another altogether. But I'm desensitized to that because I just sort of said, yeah, of course. And I'm desensitized, Jackie, to Anthony Davis, you know, allegedly reversing course. I don't even really think it was reversing course, saying that all 29 other teams are on his list. I don't know, maybe I'm just cynical and desensitized, but I was like, of course, you know, he was trying to force his way to the Lakers. And when that didn't work, they had to do a strategy switch. And of course he's opening up the door to go back to Boston because he now knows that he's a good chance he's going to Boston. Am I out of line or was that actually a giant reveal?
Oh, come on. Seriously? We all knew this. In fact, didn't
right,
you
that's
and
what
I
thought.
I thought, but I'm
looking at people saying this is a shocking announcement. These are shocking quotes. I was like, really? I wasn't shocked.
No. In fact, I thought maybe we talked about this on the pod. If we did not, we must have talked off air about the fact that the minute the trade deadline passed and Anthony Davis did not go to the Lakers, that within minutes or perhaps seconds, Boston would be introduced back into the mix. That's the job of the agent to do the best he can for his client. And again, the New Orleans Pelicans decide where Anthony Davis goes, not Anthony Davis. So you might as well. And the timing of this I thought was interesting. I was not at All-Star, but my understanding was that Anthony Davis said, I never said Boston wasn't on my list. And then minutes later did a subsequent interview where he said, all 29 teams are on my list. Some of my colleagues suggested to me that that message was tweaked a little bit by his representatives. Is that true? Mm. You can decide.
Well, his agent was standing in the background of the of the interview. I mean, I wasn't standing there at that point in time and overheard the conversation, but his agent was standing basically next to him. So,
right. Listen, if you're Anthony Davis and you keep declaring that your only objective is to win, then why wouldn't Boston be on your list, particularly if you and Kyrie Irving together can start something in Boston? He's your friend. We know he's your friend because everyone tells us what good friends you are. Why? What's the downside?
McMahon, were you surprised by the quote-unquote big reveal of the list of 29?
Honestly, what I was surprised about is that he was that revealing during his All-Star weekend interviews.
And fair. Good point.
When he left the game Thursday against the Thunder, which, by the way, what a crappy loss that was for OKC going into the All-Star break. But anyways, I kind of wonder, I'm like, is this guy trying to get out of being grilled at All-Star Weekend by the media? But clearly that wasn't it, because he seemed to not only be ready for it, but, you know, to be happy to be on that stage and much more open than he'd been with the New Orleans media.
Yeah, I in a way, I give him credit for just speaking his mind. I also think that if you look at just what's happened in, you know, when it comes to him playing, when he, after the trade deadline, he, you know, basically announced, I want to play and I want to play every game. And, you know, he came out in the first game and scored like 34 points in 28 minutes or something like that. Yeah, and I was like, whoa, we're going to get like
more than sat the fourth quarter.
Right. And I was like, we're going to get just a beast Anthony Davis here to try to prove a point. And instead, it's withered away, and now he's sending out every vibe in the world that he doesn't really want to play. He's a pretty quick about face. So if you see somebody do an about face like that, why would you be surprised he would do an about face about his list? And if you're Boston, it's even more reason to not get all worried about, yes, I'm going to sign there, and no, I'm not going to sign there. I mean, he's making pretty big reversals of decisions, you know, within hours. So why would you believe something that he's declaring about 2020? I don't think you can. I don't think he's got credit. I'm not saying he's lying. I just don't think he's got credibility announcing long-term plans when clearly he shifts depending on the lay of the land, which we all would, by the way, Jackie.
Of course. And he's a young guy who's never been in this position before. I've said this on a bunch of different places. Some players thrive on chaos and unrest. They feed on it. I would say Westbrook is one of those players. I would say LeBron is one of those players. Clearly, Anthony Davis is not.
Kyrie is.
Kyrie is. Yep. I think that's true. Just to a degree. I think he probably has had a little more chaos than he would like up to this point. But there are a lot of players who the noise is, it's a problem for them. And I think Anthony Davis is one of them. Doesn't make him a bad guy. But I think what he was trying to do was just make everybody happy. I mean, the part that was just the hardest to listen to was the part about telling how much the fans in New Orleans, how much he loved them and appreciated them. My goodness. That just was, that rang hollow. It was too, that
yeah, and then he said he'll send out an Instagram post like everybody else.
Right.
So
that's just too,
I have to admit, I saw the NBA TV interview. I did not see the video footage of him making that quote, which you just referred to, reading it, the callousness of the way he said it, I'm almost afraid to repeat it because I didn't see his face to see if he was joking or something like that, because I feel like context could be stripped out of it. But you're right, he basically said, somebody asked him what he had to say to the fans of New Orleans, and he said, I had 7 great years there. I love them. And I'm paraphrasing. I'll have something for them. I'll put something on Instagram when I leave, just like everybody else does. I hope that I'm losing context.
I didn't see it either, but I read it, and I was like, eek.
Well, I saw it. I saw it, and I'm telling you guys, some people, you know, it's funny. The best thing Anthony Davis can do right now, he said lots of things. Now he can go back next time someone talks to him and say, I'm said all I'm going to say. And that is the best thing he can do for himself. Have you noticed, by the way, Jimmy Butler, how quiet he's been, how well he's playing? Someone must have gotten to him, too. And it's been a very good decision for him. A very good decision.
Let me just say something in Philly real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Philly owners, via Elton Brand, came out and said, oh, yeah, we're going to keep this team together. But if I'm Jimmy Butler, them getting Tobias Harris took away the feeling that I'm definitely getting a 5-year contract offer.
You bet. And not only that, if you're Tobias Harris, you have so much more leverage than Jimmy Butler does. Think about it. They gave up a lot for Tobias Harris. He's going to command a big number in the open market. So I think Tobias Harris has more leverage than Jimmy Butler right now.
Well, he's younger, he's healthier, and there's no history of drama with him.
And just the way that he was acquired. It's going to be very interesting in Philadelphia. I'm looking forward to seeing Josh Harris, actually. I'm going to Sloan next. Is it next week? No, it's the week after, I guess.
March 2nd and 3rd, I think.
March 1st, 2nd, right. And I'm actually moderating a panel with Mr. Harris, and I'm very interested to get to speak with him.
Josh Harris is, he doesn't have a very high profile, but one of the most prolific American sports owners right now, by the way. He owns an NBA team, he owns an NHL team, and he has partners, but he owns a Premier League soccer team. I mean, that's, short of an NFL team, that's almost the full boat. It's Stan Kroenke.
He's also the English Premier League. He's got ownership in that, too, I believe.
Yeah, the Crystal Palace.
I thought that was a burger joint.
Well, as a quick aside, I've been to Crystal Palace's stadium, and it's a testament to the difference between the NBA and, American sport and, like, British sport. Their stadium, and it's generally believed to be a historic stadium, but it's a glorified high school stadium. And in one, years ago when the team fell on hard times, they rented out part of the stadium to a grocery store because it's in the middle of a neighborhood. You see these other, gigantic, incredible stadiums that would rival any NFL stadium. It would be like if the Giants had a road game you know, in like rural Virginia at a glorified high school stadium, and they played in the same league. And Josh Harris owns the rural team. But that said, it's still a juggernaut because of their big media deals. We won't go down that that path. Andrew, basketball season is in full swing. There's 6 feet of snow in the Midwest. There's snow in Vegas. There's snow in Hawaii, and that's when you know basketball season's in full swing. And the playoff race gets interesting, and the true contenders start to outperform the rest. We're definitely seeing that in the NBA. Then there's the non-contenders who are outperforming the rest, if you know what I mean. And whenever you're driving your family and friends this basketball season, you should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely, especially in the snow. Take it from someone who lives in the Midwest. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the court. So when it comes to choosing tires, especially in the snow, and I guess in the rain out here in L.A., Andrew, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. Goodyear, more driven. Going into All-Star Weekend, the media and ESPN, we were included in that. There is a lot of excitement around James Harden right now because he's on this incredible streak. He's putting up scoring numbers like we've never seen. There was a lot. The media really wanted to talk about James Harden. And one thing I found out was that not all the players wanted to talk about it, and not all of the players are thrilled with the way things are going with him. I think they all respect him. I think they all think that his mastery of the game is worthy of praise. But, you know, I don't want to give away too much because some of this stuff was captured for a feature that will be on ESPN later, but I'll ask Andrew to just back me up that guys on camera were... Andrew, how would you describe it when we were asking guys about James Harden?
They were feisty. They were pretty willing to just speak their mind, which is surprising because I think we're all pretty comfortable with the athletes being much more media savvy than they showed themselves to be on this question.
And then I can just say off the record, like, again, nobody's like saying this guy stinks. They all recognize he's awesome, but there is a real irritation with at least a segment. I can't say everybody, but at least a segment of players who are irritated that they think he gets away with traveling and they think that he gets away with, you know, foul baiting, and they don't like that he plays such isolation. And McMahon, Harden he was a little bit sensitive about this. He was sensitive in an interview with Rachel Nichols at a sit down. And then I can just tell you, I went to his interview session, and he was sensitive about it at his interview session at All-Star 2.
And the Rockets organization as a whole is sensitive about it. Matter of fact, they are sensitive about me thinking that they're sensitive about it. I had a long discussion with somebody over there yesterday. Well, he's being asked these questions. How do you want to respond? Okay, and look, I'm not saying he's wrong to feel defensive about it. You know, the man's putting up 40 points per game and carrying an ravaged Rockets teams to wins and being subjected to criticism. I don't blame him for being a little, you know, feisty about it, but. And to me, the most revealing thing that came out of Harden's mouth during All-Star Weekend that got out there wasn't to the media. It was to Steph Curry. So Steph's wearing, and I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but he's wearing a mic for NBA TV for the Saturday All-Star practices. And whether he just forgot that he was wearing the mic and said this, or because he knew he was wearing the mic, he said this, I don't know. But he's talking to Mike Budenholzer, just shooting the bleep at practice, and just brings up out of the blue that he says, you know, it's interesting because I was talking to James in the back, obviously complimenting him on what he's doing. The first thing he said was, yeah, this is fun, but I want to play different, like playing by myself, whatever, hero ball. But like the people want him to play like that in a system where they can actually play beautiful basketball with guys that know how to play. Now, I can't imagine.
I'm a little bit confused as to who said what.
Harden told Steph Curry, hey, yeah, thanks for the compliment. I don't really want to play this way. I just right now, right. I don't want to play this hero ball. I just don't really have a choice right now. Right, Tim? I saw the clip.
Yeah, Steph's paraphrase of what Harden told him was, yeah, this is fun, but I want to play different than like playing by myself, whatever, hero ball.
Right. Okay. So, I think the reason he's sensitive, though, Brian, is it's one thing for people like us to criticize James Harden for the style of play. It's another thing when your own peers, NBA players, start talking about it. Now, you're telling
me you have a piece coming out.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, Scottie Pippen on the jump. You heard all that stuff. And I think Kobe's the one
that really stung him. Because that was the guy he idolized.
But what Kobe said to me, go back and listen to it. I don't even feel like that was a critical statement. I think all he was saying was, hey, James is doing an amazing thing. But, you know, you can't win that way. Well, James knows that, too. I mean,
yeah,
D'Antoni
knows
that.
He did agree with that point.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't feel like Kobe was criticizing him at all. I think what Pippen said was different. He's talking about the fouls, you know, the fouls and dribbling and the step back threes and the bravado of all of that. But I will say this, and listen, I'm at times critical of the way James Harden plays, but not now. Not now. You can't be. Because Chris Paul isn't himself, because Clint Capela is still out. And the numbers tell us what their record was, 21-10 since he started playing this way, from 14th to 5th in the Western Conference. I can't argue with it because it is by necessity. Now, we all said the same thing, guys, a few weeks ago, I believe. When Chris Paul comes back 100%, if that's even possible at this point, and when Capela comes back, which I assume will be sometime this week.
Tomorrow.
Right. He's practicing. He's playing on Thursday, yeah.
Right. So let's see how James Harden plays then. And then if this continues, maybe there's a right to have some criticism. But up to this point, I just don't know what other choice he has.
Well, that was the point he made with Rachel for sure, and I think during some of the All-Star Weekend availability. But, you know, I was asking, the Rockets, they started practicing again yesterday. James got the day off give him a little bit of an All-Star break, but we talked to Chris Paul, and I was asking him, you know, stylistically, how do you see this? And he was pretty evasive and non-committal about it. I do think with Capela, it'll be a little less ISO, a little more pick and roll. But look, the Rockets need James Harden to carry a historically heavy load because, one, he's great. I mean, James Harden going ISO is the most efficient offense in the NBA when you look at the numbers. And two, you know, CP3 is not capable of being the guy that he was a year ago, even like pre-hamstring. You know, he was banged up and dealt with some elbow tendonitis and stuff like that, but he has not had the same juice all year long. Last year, if he got switched on to a big, it was an automatic bucket. That's not the case. And so I think that Harden's just had to, not just because of the injuries to CP3, but because, you know, CP3 is no longer playing at a superstar level. And that's a long-term problem.
That's a good point.
It is. But if I'm Mike D'Antoni, then I'm going to go to Gordon. Or I'm going to run more pick and roll for Capela. Because he knows, and you know, we all know this. Right, Tim? I don't think you'll disagree. Mm-hmm. When it comes time to the postseason, if you keep playing this way, every team in the league is going to say, okay, we'll double and triple this dude, and we'll make everybody else beat us. I mean, that's just what's going to happen.
What it reminds me of.
Of course, they're already doing that, but yeah.
They are. And the other thing is, the numbers are up. He's up to averaging 37 minutes a game, but you know better than I do. What is the average? What's his average over the last 20 games? I'm sure it's higher than that. So that's the biggest. If I'm the Rockets, that is the single biggest issue.
D'Antoni talks about wanting to get him down to 35, but that's a lot easier said than done. I tell you, CP3 had a couple 35-minute games just before the break, and that can't happen. Not if you plan on having him available.
You
got to
keep him down 30, 32, right? 30 to 32
at the most.
I would say
32 is an absolute max.
Right.
So what this reminds me of is the 2015 finals, where LeBron Love was out and Kyrie got hurt after in game one, and LeBron played preposterous you know, hero ball for the last five games of that series. He was putting up like 40, kind of like numbers Harden is, like 43-point triple doubles. He was taking like 37 shots. He was going like 12 of 37. And they got it to six games. And after the games, LeBron was like, this is not how I want to play it, but I have to play it. And he almost won. Iguodala ended up winning it, but it was a close vote. He almost won MVP on a losing team because of it. But there was nobody going, oh, this is ridiculous basketball. He's being a ball hog. He's not doing, you know, he was doing what he had to do, and it was the Cavs' only hope, and they actually won the first two games of him playing that way. They lost the first game in overtime, and they won games two and three. But I think one of the reasons why there's a pushback to Harden doing the exact same thing is because of the perception that he has an edge because of the officials. He gets away with travels, and he gets away, you know, he gets touch fouls or he whatever. I mean, and you can see the frustration in the players. We have guys running around with their hands behind their back. And then you remember when Curry did that thing where he purposely traveled with the two steps?
Right.
And he got called for the travel.
And then put up the 1-3.
Yeah.
He actually did it backwards, but we knew what he was trying to say.
Right. You know, guys are actively like, that really annoys players. And when Andrew and I were interviewing the Rising Stars and we were asking him about Harden, like, this is what they were saying. Like, they were like, well, he's a great player, but he gets away with traveling. Oh my gosh, he's a great player. I love him. I mean, he's so talented. He's so amazing. But, you know, it helps when the refs help him out. Like, I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's part of the burden, I guess you could say, that he has.
Well,
that said, guys, I think if the vote was taken today, he'd run away with the MVP because I think the media is fascinated by his scoring.
Well, and I think we can make a case for Giannis, you can make a case for Paul George, but he's scoring at a rate we haven't seen since Wilt Chamberlain while carrying a team that's had its two best players miss long stretch, or its two next best players, I should say, miss long stretches due to injuries. And, you know, the Rockets take on the whining about the fouls he draws, the whining about the walks and all that, and, you know, I wrote a big thing on Harden before the break, but their take's basically, look, if it's easy, have your star do it.
Right. Go ahead. That's fair.
Look, this is the step back that is legal by the NBA rules. If it's so easy, have your star start shooting them. Have him shoot 12 a game. See if he does as well as James does. If it's so easy to get those calls, go get them. It's not like he's hanging out with, you know, officials or anything. And honestly, the Rockets think that he doesn't get as many calls as he should, but that's all
I know. And I've heard that.
But I think the other blowback is that, you know, we've made the Golden State Warriors are certainly the darlings of the NBA media. Do we agree? I think we do. And
although,
that's because
they say stuff like we're the most scrutinized team in history, but
I think that might even be true. But anyway, my point is they're accessible, and you know everybody on that team has a microphone of their faces, including Bruce Frazier, Ron Adams, everybody, and so they have become the standard by which everyone else is held up against, and they play a vastly different kind of basketball than the Rockets do right now. The extra pass, it's all about passing the ball, assists. The Houston Rockets have been dead last in assists, haven't they, Tim, for 3 years in a row? Is that correct?
I believe you. I'd have to check that math.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure they were last year anyway. And so we're also talking about a difference in style and a difference in, if you want to call a basketball purist, let's say that they're also going to fly in the face of what James Harden is doing.
Real quick, let's not act like James Harden isn't one of the best passers in the league.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. All I'm saying, yeah, but he may be one of the best passers in the league, but everything he
does, dominates the ball more than anybody.
Right, and you know the stretch. I mean, the most incredible thing about what he's done is the long stretches of baskets that he got that were unassisted. I mean, it was just an outrageous number.
The 302 straight points.
That's just an outrageous number.
And this is what I think is interesting, like players versus media. I wouldn't say that the media celebrated that, but the media tracked it and fans were fascinated by it. And it was in some ways sold as, my God, look at this guy. He's doing everything for his team, 300 straight points. Whereas players were like, you got to be kidding me, bro. You know, play team basketball.
Maybe the thing is they were winning games during that stretch. And so the point of the game is to win.
Which is Harden's point. I know.
That's Kobe's point, though. It's not sustainable in the postseason. And he's right. It's not.
Well, guess what? And if Capella and CP3 are out, nothing's sustainable in the postseason because they'll get their ass kicked in the first round and go home. And
I just
think during that stretch, you know, it's like, what do you want the guy to do?
No, I agree with you there.
This MVP race is an ideological race. You have people on one side that are absolutely fascinated by Harden's ability to score and carry his team. And he has the narrative on his side of this Chamberlain streak. Just like 2 years ago, he was on the wrong side of this narrative when Westbrook got the MVP over him when Westbrook was chasing Oscar Robertson.
Yeah.
And his team wasn't as good, but he was carrying that team, and he got the triple-double average, and the Westbrook, and he had the Durant revenge tour. And the narrative
And he was
around,
absolutely dominant in crunch time that year.
That's true. The story around, there you go. Well, the Cojones factor keeps getting giving out to Mr. Harden, so Harden is in that same boat. Whereas Harden was just, his mastery was incredible, and by all rights probably could have or should have won the MVP, but he didn't have the story, and his team was better. This year we have Giannis, who plays, now granted we haven't seen a player like him before, but he plays an old school style of basketball. The man goes to the basket. He leads the league in scoring in the paint. He, you know, rarely shoots three pointers. Very much more of a team-oriented style of play that the Bucks play, and they have the best record. But Harden has the better story. I think Harden's going to win it, but it's going to be an ideological, you know, clash of.
Well, and isn't it too just? I mean, we haven't even talked about Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's having an MVP year too. An incredible year.
He misses
year.
Too many games, though.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, but, okay. But in terms of just pure basketball, I mean, he's the best two-way player in the conversation, right? Or maybe, I guess you can make a case for Paul George this year.
Yeah.
Paul George this year.
Paul, you can make a case for Paul George and Giannis.
Paul George is having one of the best two-way seasons I've ever seen. I mean, offense, defense.
That's Kawhi every year, in my opinion. Now, you're right because of the games. The missed games, I agree. It's going to cost him. But I think you can make that argument every year with Kawhi Leonard, except for last year, of course.
But I would say Paul George is playing better than Kawhi Leonard as well. I mean, this is a dude who's putting up 28-8-4 and is, like I said, he's legitimately a defense player of the year candidate. He's playing for, I think, the Thunder, the best defense team in the league efficiency-wise. I'd have to double-check that.
But isn't Harden also... Harden is third in the league in steals, and
I'll say this about Harden. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, when Zach Lowe and I had the MVP discussion, I think it was just before the break, I'm not going to sit here and compare James Harden's defense to Paul George's. I'm not going to compare it to Giannis. Those guys are far superior defense players. But I will say, the days of saying, oh, James Harden just, you know, he's this huge liability on defense. No, he's not. Now, the Rockets are a crappy defensive team. There's no doubt about that. But that's not because of James Harden. He is up there among the league leaders in deflections, in steals, and, you know, post defense. He's established himself as an elite post defender. Now, do you want to get James Harden, isolated one-on-one? Absolutely. Just not in the post. But yeah, you can't say, look, James Harden's one of the worst defense players in the league anymore. It's just not accurate.
But see, I do think you have to be careful about deflection and steals as a measure of a great defensive player. You're talking about a player that gambles more than they should.
Right.
At times when they shouldn't. So, I mean, we don't need to, but I'm looking at NBA team defensing on teamrankings.com just for your purposes, Tim. Milwaukee's 1, Indiana 2,
okay.
Utah 3, OKC 4, Boston 5. But to your point, Oklahoma City is an elite defensive team. Elite.
Right. No and question. Also Milwaukee at number 1, and Giannis does have a lot to do with that.
He does.
6'11". You know, guy with a wingspan that's, you know, basically covers the entire state and the athleticism. And so, speaking of the Bucks.
Yes, Andrew.
Speaking of the Bucks, we also have to stop for commercials on some platforms. While we do that, do you want to share with Jackie and Tim what happened to you at that All-Star party on Saturday night?
And I've never seen so much whipped cream, Jackie. Never seen
and
so much whipped cream.
We're back.
One thing can I say about Giannis? If I'm the NBA, I'm taking Giannis, and I'm putting him on every bus, every cab, every billboard, every promo. He is what you should be trumpeting as loud as you can, because until further notice, and I always have to be careful to say that, he is a young, incredible player who loves where he's playing, and it's the ultimate definition of a small market team in a very cold place. So if you're the NBA, you should be trumpeting this dude from here to kingdom come. Now, he may change his mind. I understand that. But for this season, for this season, with all the drama that is surrounding the NBA, and a lot of it, I mean, I always say drama, people say drama is good. It's ratings and all that. But for the integrity of this game right now, I know it can change, but right now, for the rest of this year, I am pumping Giannis from here to kingdom come if I'm Adam Silver.
Yeah, if I'm going to pump that angle, though, I'm going to wait until that decision is made on the 2020 Supermax extension.
She's talking about exciting fans right now.
I'm not talking about
because
this
the Bucks could end up in the Bucks could be in the finals, and
yeah, I'm talking
and
about
to
this
that
year.
End, I'm excited about a game tomorrow, Celtics at Bucks.
We'll be there, my friend. We'll be there.
These teams have played twice this year, both in Boston. This is their last meeting. Kyrie's going to play, right, Jackie, you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I played the All-Star game.
I was just double
checking. Very
double
bad look.
Well, just double checking. Just double checking. Yep. Obviously, they played 7 games in the playoffs last year, a really good 7-game series. Right now, it's really hard to project, but right now this would be a second-round matchup potential. I think these two, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Toronto and Philly. I think we're going to see great stuff in the Eastern Conference, but these particular teams, both games they've played have been relatively close. I'm excited for this game, Jackie, and I just like when these two teams play each other. I think it's different styles going up against each other, good coaches. Both rosters are very deep. A lot of matchup things. I like this matchup a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, the Celtics, it's almost as if they just decide to concede Giannis. They just can't stop him.
Yeah.
They can't. I mean, he really they really struggled. And so I think Middleton has gone off against the Celtics also in the past. I think they like to throw Eric Bledsoe off his game. You surely recall that from last year's postseason. Two teams that are, you know, in the top 5 defensively, and one team that, as you say, has been charmed and earned that, by the way, and another team that's realizing, you know what? Okay, let's all come back. Let's put aside whatever our petty little differences are, because now it's time. It's time to make some moves here. It's time to try to get into that. If I'm the Celtics, I don't think I can catch Milwaukee in the standings. Toronto has the easiest schedule in the NBA the rest of the way. I'm probably not going to catch them. I want to make sure I end up 3 in the East. If I'm the Celtics, that's what I'm pointing towards, and this is the best place in the world to start with this game tomorrow night.
Yeah, the first two games, Giannis has only averaged 3 assists in those two games because they basically try to clamp down. Also, you know, the Bucks strategy.
What's the 3-point shooting been in those games?
Exactly. So the Bucks strategy, from what I can tell, is to just let the Celtics shoot threes. In the one game that the Celtics won, they shot 55 threes, made 24 of them. the Bucks basically want the Celtics to do something that they're sometimes shaky in, which is shoot the long ball. And that seems to be their strategy. So I think if the Celtics shoot well, they'll have a great chance to win, which seems pretty basic for analysis. But, you look at their last nine games, it's 5-4 Boston. The Celtics have had way more home games. I think they've had six of those at home. This is a real rivalry, I think. I don't know if there's, vinegar in it yet, but, this is a real rivalry that's budding, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Budding,
and
I
great
get
respect.
It.
Great respect from both sides, too. And last year, Bud wasn't there last year, And Mirotić, is Mirotić going to play? I haven't seen that.
I don't have an update on that.
I don't know if he's playing. Baines is still out.
Based on what he said before the break, it sounded like he'd be ready to roll.
So that'll be interesting. And Baines is still out. And people say, why are you talking about Aaron Baines? He's so important to the Celtics, and they haven't had him all year. And maybe it's questionable whether they will, because he's had all these crazy injuries. He's got this foot injury now. But what he does against a guy like Giannis is significant. It makes a difference. And they just haven't had him, and I don't think they'll have him for this game either. So I'm looking forward to it. Gordon Hayward, his numbers over the last 2 weeks up until the break, if you're a Celtics fan, incredibly promising. I think he has the highest net rating of all the Celtics leading up to those last 2 weeks. And, of course, the other guy that's played really, really well since the whole Anthony Davis thing is Jason Tatum. Because, again, we talked about some people who thrive in chaos or thrive under pressure. He's one of them. He's all about positive self-talk. Think about that. Think about the All-Star game. Going in there, Jason Tatum is the one name you hear the most when you talk about Anthony Davis in Boston. So what does he do? He goes out. He wins the skills challenge by hitting a half-court shot.
That was awesome.
It was unbelievable. And had 30 points in the Rising Star game. He's one of these guys that's like, pressure? Bring it on, baby. And we saw that in the postseason last year.
He also said, although this wasn't like,
they're going to win.
Well, yeah, but he also said, I want to be in Boston the rest of my career. Now, what is he supposed to say?
But he also said the Celtics are going to win the championship. He also said that, by the way. So this is a guy that's all about positive self-talk. And if you want to talk about his future, you want to trade me? Well, here's what you're trading. He's all about positive self-talk. It's so funny. You can identify guys like that very early on, and he is certainly one of them.
You know who also had a good All-Star weekend amongst some drama was Kyle Kuzma. Came in. Eventually he said, I've had enough talking about the trades, but he did talk about it for a few days, was very frank. We had a great talk. Went out and won the MVP of the Rising Stars game. I think he had 35 or 37 points.
Got 27 shots up.
Well, that's true. But he played, he came out and didn't pout and, said, look, this is what I'm doing. So I liked it. All right, well, we've got a couple of big games. McMahon will be at Jackie, you'll be at Boston tomorrow, Boston, Milwaukee. And McMahon will be out here at Rockets Lakers. I'll be at Rockets Lakers. So we'll have some looking forward to getting going again. And looking forward to the second half, in quotes, as if we're not two-thirds of the way through the season.
I know, right?
Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Talk to you soon.